This podcast is brought to you by Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. Do what I did and update your smile. Call 844-A-PERFECT-SMILE. When you change your smile, you change your life.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
Her name is pronounced comma, like the punctuation mark. Look, Kamala, okay?
Okay.
Seriously, I've heard every sort of bastardization.
Okay. So what?
Names can be so hard to pronounce sometimes. Even the names of people who have been on the scene for years. Say it with me. Kamala.
That's what I asked Kamala.
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 Ku Klux Klan is the Ku Klux Klan.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
There was nobody more insulting to Biden than she was. She said horrible things about him. She said horrible things about him. Horrible things. And now all of a sudden she's running to be vice president, saying how wonderful he is.
He also went back to his old playbook, resorting to a familiar sexist jeer for his new competitor, calling the senator nasty.
Called her nasty three times, using that really gendered word to describe her.
Phony Kamala and Sleepy Joe. Phony is a very gendered term.
Okay, this is news to me.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
After I hopefully get elected, we'll be terminating the payroll tax, so that will mean anywhere from $5,000 to even more per family, and also great for businesses and great for jobs.
Is a payroll tax cut okay from your point of view,
no,
or is it a
not.
Non-starter?
No, it is not.
On the payroll tax cut, this is necessary because our economy and our people need this boost.
Unchained and unstoppable.
And the president was slamming President Obama, Vice President Biden, accusing them of spying on the Trump campaign. That is just not true. That did not happen.
You're a clown. That's all you'll ever be.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
I learn new words every day now, listening to Democrat operatives in the media and on the campaign trail. The word today is gendered. It's a gendered slur. I thought we used the word sexist. I was never really fond of that word, but now we have a new word. It's gendered.
So the word phony is gendered.
I never knew the word phony was gendered, but Grace explained it to me. She had an answer very much at the ready. What was it, Grace?
It's a slur against women to call someone phony because we like to talk on the phone.
I don't think so. I was looking back over my column and thinking of all the people I call phony. And I'm guessing that probably 90 to 95% of the times I refer to phonies or phony people, it's male.
Yeah. And you know what? As a woman, Howard, if I can even say that, as a person with, what do they say now? A person with a cervix. I want to say that there is a lot of insults that you can throw my way that I might say is because I'm a woman. When people, I'm looking at you, YouTubers, when they comment on my eyebrows or my hair, some of them have a little tinge of sexism.
You're just, you know, you're baiting them. They're going to, you
know. Oh,
I know.
That's gonna... okay, though. You know, give them, throw them a little red meat. But what I will say is if someone calls me a phony, I don't take that as sexist. I take that as a person thing. Me as a person, I am phony.
You know what I prefer to phony, though? Phony baloney.
Phony baloney. Ooh, baloney. You know, like can't beat that.
Like a Blazing Saddles. We've got to protect our phony baloney jobs.
Yeah, it seems like now you cannot insult Kamala at all without being called a sexist or a racist.
How dare you?
It's Kamala.
What did Please. I say?
To is mispronounce it, it you, that's a
gendered
slur.
Did I mispronounce
slur.
It too?
Yeah,
oh, it is
did.
A tricky name. It's Kamala. Said it wrong again, didn't I?
No, that was it. Comma. Like the punctuation mark. Comma. Comma la.
Well, how about calm Allah?
Nope.
Communist Allah?
I think it's
calm Allah.
As far as the worst goes, like as far as the most offensive you can say it, is Kamala. That's what they don't want.
Kamala.
So when my sister, when we were younger, she had a friend named Sarah. And I would say,
with
oh.
An H?
Yes. And I would say, oh, is Sarah coming over, or is Sarah going to go to the movies? And one day she stopped me and she said, you know, you really should learn how to say her name right. And I thought, how? It's the name is Sarah.
Was it Sarah?
She said, you're saying it Sarah. It's Sarah.
How about Sarah? Sarah.
And that's all I can think about with Kamala.
Sarah. Whatever will be, will be.
And names are beautiful no matter what your name is. But if you're going to name someone, and Taylor, this is a good topic for you because you're about to name another person. I just think you should name someone something that has a universal way of saying it because it just gets too complicated. You know? Vowels, man.
I'm just wondering why they didn't name her. I said yesterday, I think, why didn't they just name her Pamela?
Easy for you to say, Howie. I'm hearing a lot of dog whistles right now.
I know, me too. We should move on. So I want to talk a little bit about a tropical storm.
Does this one have a name?
It does.
What is it?
Josephine.
All right, because last one was
an Isasis or whatever
Isais, Howie. Oh my gosh. Tropical storm Josephine has just become the earliest J storm on record to form in the Atlantic Ocean, signaling that we could be in for a busy hurricane season. The storm, which...
We're all going to die. That's the underlying theme of all journalism today. We're all going to die. If the virus, the panic doesn't get you, the rioters are going to get you, the homicide hornets, and now Josephine.
But that's the thing, is these headlines now, they don't just tell you, you know, things are bad. They go, if you think things are bad now, just wait. Like, that's what they keep writing. Oh, you thought 2020 was bad? There's going to be a rat plague.
This is the most 2020 thing to happen since 2020.
Did you know that the ice is melting at record levels in Antarctica?
Well, that's been happening for like ever.
No, but I just read that a couple of days ago.
See, the ice melting is so, you know, last year. Now, to really scare people, they're coming up with brand new things. It's like, oh, you thought this plague was bad? What are we going to do for the next plague? And all I want to say about that is, let's just, you know, it's like what your mom used to say. One day at a time. Let's focus on this.
I want to follow up on the squirrel in Colorado.
Yeah.
I haven't read anything for 10 days. A squirrel with bubonic plague in Colorado.
Well, you heard about the rats in New York City, right? What's happening? So the rats, there's a rat war going on. And what's happening? Yes.
We've the had Jets some versus
rat
the
wars
Sharks.
In Boston, too. Just there was a guy named Whitey Bulger.
Oh, yeah,
Stevie
different rats.
Flimmy. they were big rats.
These rats are huge. Just wait, Howie. So what's happening is, and I've done some research on this, I guess what happened is, in New York City, there's always been rodents. And there's usually tons of trash because there's restaurants and tons of people. But now the restaurants aren't open and there's not a lot of people. So the rats are starving. So what did they do? What did they do? Taylor, do you want to guess?
Did they feed the rats?
No. The rats started eating each other. And now they're cannibal rats. And so now only the biggest rats are surviving. So it's become the biggest rats versus the biggest rats.
So they've created their own Chaz, their own Scud.
Yes.
You know, that's one of my all-time favorite New York Post front pages. This guy, this photographer was walking by a Dunkin' Donuts in Midtown, and there was a rat was eating one of the donuts in the tray, and they just took a picture of it. It was on the front page. But see, that Dunkin' Donuts is probably gone now, right? So the rat...
Was he eating an old-fashioned donut, or is he more of a modern?
I don't know. I don't know what he was eating.
More of a modern rat.
I'm just saying that he had nothing to eat. Not even one of those sticks which they used to call Krellas.
Krellas. Well, you know what I always think, Howie, when I see any sort of like seagull or rat or anything with a big donut, or they got a big score, I always think to myself, "Good for you." You know, like imagine how happy that animal is inside their little tiny brain. It's probably like hitting the lottery for humans. Anyway, let's talk other news. AMC theaters will sell 15-cent tickets when cinemas reopen next week.
I'm going to say the tickets will still be overpriced.
The seats will be empty.
That's right.
Joe Biden
that's
will think they're still expensive. Yeah.
I know. He's going to be like, what?
It was 5 cents last week.
Yeah, what happened to those Nickelodeons I used to go to?
It says AMC.
I'd like to see a talkie.
AMC theaters will sell movie tickets for dirt cheap 15 cents a pop next week to lure folks back to the big screen amid the coronavirus crisis.
Why even charge anybody at that point? Why can't you just say free? Why do you have to charge 15 cents? Who's got that kind of change lying around?
Yeah, it's just inconvenient at that point. You have to go into the store and break a dollar. come on, buy a pack of gum, maybe. Yeah.
And I thought
there
was
saying there's a shortage of change nationwide.
Yes, they are.
So you have to come up with a dollar, and then the AMC is as if they're not. Aren't they already perilously close to bankruptcy? And now they have to find three quarters and a dime.
You wouldn't mind, Howie. All we're being told is how dirty everything is right now. You know, every time I walked into a store down the Cape, I had to hand sanitize. My sister was not happy because she didn't like their hand sanitizers. And she said, it's basically they're rubbing hard tequila on my hands all day.
There's another killer story. Poison hand sanitizer. That's a news story. You're getting new news today here on Newsmax.
New news. But what I was going to say is, so now they want us to hand sanitize every time we walk into any sort of place, and then yet we're all going to be carrying around a dime and a nickel in our hands? That is dirty, with a capital yeah. D.
And why are they promoting it as being dirt cheap?
Yeah, you're right. That's a microaggression. I don't like that at all.
What movie is out right now that would be even worth seeing? Who's releasing movies in the middle of this pandemic?
Well, a lot of movies were put on postponement, like Mulan was put on postponement. But then what they figured out was they released the Trolls movie for the little kids, and they released it, and they just said, forget the movie theater.
I don't need to go to a movie theater. I just need to turn on the computer, and I can get all the Trolls I want.
Oh, yeah, we got plenty of Trolls. We got a surplus of Trolls. Looking at you guys, YouTube, back at you. But the thing is, they released the Trolls movie, and they just put it straight to TV, and they made tons of money because I think they were selling it for like $30, but parents were like, I'll pay $30 to keep my kids occupied for 2 hours. So then they started saying to themselves, we don't need the movie theaters anymore. We can just go right to TV for $30. And now AMC's mad at all of these subscription places because they're like, you need us. You need us. And they're like, we don't need you anymore.
Yeah, I think movie theaters are going the way of the Boston Red Sox, for instance. Mm-hmm. I'm Howie Carr.
The paper boy with a big microphone. Howie Carr.
This is Karen from Billerica, Massachusetts.
This is Adrian in Swanton, Vermont.
This is Miss Susan up in Warner, New Hampshire. And this is the Howie Carr Show.
Honey is the free online shopping tool that automatically finds the best promo codes and applies them to your card. And now it's part of the PayPal family. Start saving in seconds. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Howie. That's joinhoney.com/Howie. We just had a caller in the last hour texted in and said she bought two pairs of shorts at the L.L. Bean and saved $15 with Honey. It's a great deal. It's free.
If I was an online shopper, I'm sure I would save a lot of money with Honey. But
if you were, yes.
Yeah, I don't shop a lot online.
All right, Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Do you support a nationwide face mask mandate?
That was proposed this afternoon by the Democrat ticket from the basement. No, of course not.
Only 7% support it.
And I saw a lot of people talking about breaking down the announcement afterwards. You can't announce something like that and then not take questions. You can't announce a mandate and then walk off the stage.
If you're a Democrat, you can.
It's just unbelievable. And I think if you had asked me this like 10 years ago, I might have said, oh, yeah, whatever. But the thing is, it doesn't make sense to put in more rules in place and mandates if you're not going to enforce them. All of this stuff is just words.
Right.
To make them feel good.
Or if you're going to say you can't have a drink, like they're saying in Massachusetts, unless you order some food, so everybody is just going around it, like in New York as well, just by having potato chips. And then they say you can't have potato chips, so they bring you out a bowl of French fries. And then they give you as many drinks as you want. I mean, it's just, you're right. I mean, don't pass stupid laugh that you can't enforce or that people are going to laugh at, because it's going to lead to people having contempt for all laws, even the serious ones.
I know. I was at a restaurant last night, and you couldn't put your drink. They have the tables kind of side-saddled up to the bar, and you can sit at the table, but the second you put your drink on the bar, you get in trouble. And the people there are so nice. Like, I love this restaurant. I'm not going to name it, but they're fabulous. But they have to abide by these stupid rules. And the waitress has said to me, I feel ridiculous. She goes, I had to tell a woman 10 times last night not to put her drink on the bar. And she wasn't belligerent or anything, but she was just kept forgetting because she's like, why does this matter? What is the difference between this and this?
How about when you go to a restaurant where they have specials, right? But they're wearing a mask.
I know.
And you go, keep going, what did you say? What did you say? Finally, they go, and they tell you what the specials are.
I know.
And then they put the mask back up. It's just so absurd.
Well, now at the coffee stores like Dunkin' Donuts, if you go inside, they have the plexiglass screen. They have a mask on. I have a mask on. You can't understand anything. It's like we're miming to each other. One tea, two tea bags, one milk.
Oh, and then they have the little cutout in the plexiglass, so they have to kind of tilt your drink under it.
And for those of you who aren't from Massachusetts, we have new statistics out today from our governor, Governor Lockdown, Charlie Parker. The last 2 weeks, that's 14 days, 14 fatalities, according to the latest. Used to be 150 that had died. Now, today, it's 14 that have died.
So on our website, HowieCarShow.com, you can check out our Howie story about the deleted page in Charlie Parker's new streamlined coronavirus dashboard. But you can also check out the chart, the two-week chart, which is very telling as well.
Yeah.
So that's HowieCarShow.com. You can't miss it. It's the front page story on our site.
12 people over the age of 80 have died in the last 2 weeks. Two people over the ages, between the ages of 40 and 49. Nobody else has died. Those are today's numbers. Yesterday's numbers, there were 18 people died the previous day. Now it's 14 in 2 weeks. But it's all on the level, folks. Everything's on the level.
I just think they're miscalculating this to such an extent, because if you walk around with people, I'm not saying just Republicans. I've heard, you know, young people who I kind of think are liberal, everyone is getting sick of this. And to see Kamala up there today so proudly saying, we're going to have a mask mandate. And I'll tell you one thing, you should be asking Trump, when are you going to get your vaccination? I'm like, these people are so out of touch if they think this is what people are angry about. People are angry that they go golfing and they can't get a beer, but they can get a Diet Coke. People are losing their minds. They're like, what? I just don't like that we're supposed to be able to make sense of this when none of it makes any sense. That's the part I find insulting. In other news, Howie, California is on the verge of driving out yet another business. This time it's Uber. Uber has officially, they've had it up to here with California.
One of our VIPs is a former Uber driver, but he's been out of the car since March.
Once upon a time, California was a golden state, a shining example of how America should be run. This is from the American Thinker. Then the Democrats took over. Since then, the state has gone downhill fast. One of the worst things the state assembly just did last year was to pass legislation that effectively killed the gig economy, i.e. people who enjoy freelance work that enables them to control their own time, because they put in all these laws that you had to pay them a certain amount and there had to be all this red tape. And they're crushing Uber. They're going to leave. I think a lot of companies are just going to move to Texas or to a red state, to Florida.
If you come to Texas or Florida, don't bring your voting habits from New York or California or Illinois. Leave your voting habits at the state line, okay?
That should be a rule. You can't come here unless you're going to vote red.
I'm from Florida, but I'm speaking for Texas, too. I'm Howie Carr.
Have you had enough yet of the volatility of the stock markets? Down 1,000 or more points one day, up the next. Are you tired of watching that little box at the bottom of your TV screen that shows the market plunging hundreds of points? You need to get diversified with Orion Metal Exchange. You shouldn't be caught flat-footed in this roller coaster ride the stock markets have been on. No matter what the reason, the coronavirus or before that, the oil price war abroad, you always need to be diversified. And that means owning some precious metals, gold and silver. Listen up. Orion Metal Exchange is the only precious metals company that I trust. If you still haven't taken advantage of their no obligation guide, it's not too late. Give them a call today to learn more about gold and silver. Call Orion today at 1-800-912-2300. That's 1-800-912-2300. Call them now, 1-800-912-2300.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios,
844-500-4242. We've had Peter Schweitzer on before. He's got a great book out, Profiles in Corruption, Abuse of Power by America's Progressive Elite. And it was about the Democratic contenders for president in 2020. There's a great chapter on Bernie Sanders. We won't get into that today, but he made his money in some very novel ways, funneling campaign cash through his wife's business to allow her to do the media buys for the campaign. There's a lot on Joe Biden, but today I wanted to talk a little bit about Kamala Harris, the new candidate for vice president, and her profiles in corruption. Peter Schweitzer, thanks for being with us here on the Howie Carr Show.
Always great to be with you, Howie. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk first about her days in San Francisco as the girlfriend of Willie Brown, the mayor and the assembly speaker. How did she use her affair with Willie Brown to become a prominent politician?
It's a great question, Howie. I mean, a lot of times when people look at her romantic involvement with Willie Brown at the time, he was actually older than her father. He was still married. And they kind of fixate on those things. My point is, Howie, that that relationship was predicated on political cronyism and corruption. And what do I mean? Kamala Harris was 28 years old when they started dating. At the time, Willie Brown was the Speaker of the California Assembly. What did he do? He started dating Kamala Harris. She worked in a local county office. He put her on two state boards, one of which dealt with Medicare and Medicaid, which, of course, she had no background in. She was paid by taxpayers on both of those boards, which met, like, you know, 2 days every month.
Right.
She was paid more than $100,000 for each one of those boards.
A part-time job at best. She was a director.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly. She was a director, and you weren't actually required to attend these meetings. She didn't attend all of them. The point being that she was put in positions she had no qualifications to be put in solely because she was romantically involved with a very powerful figure at the time, which was Willie Brown. And that kind of started her advance. You know, he also along the way bought her a BMW 7 Series that she drove around in San Francisco to. The relationship, the romantic relationship ended, but he remained a political sponsor to Kamala Harris. And what happened is that a local prosecutor, a guy named Terrence Hallinan in San Francisco, the San Francisco prosecutor, was bringing up charges on several of Willie Brown's friends on corruption charges. So Willie Brown gets behind Kamala Harris to run against Terrence Hallinan. Now, when she gets into the race, she's in a distant third in a three-man race. Willie Brown gets his political aides to run her campaign. He has another political aide set up an independent expenditure committee, raises money for her election, and he raises money for her. He gets her juiced in with the Getty family, with other wealthy families in San Francisco. Kamala Harris runs against the incumbent, raises more than twice as much money than Hallinan does, and she beats Terrence Hallinan with Willie Brown's help. What does she do then? Some of the first things she does is she drops the fraud and the corruption cases that were pending against Willie Brown aides. There was a guy that was the head of the San Francisco Planning Commission who, by the way, Howie, just happened to be taking $180,000 in fees from developers that had matters before the city. Terrence Hallinan was charging him with ethics violations. She drops the case. There was another gentleman named Ramirez who had a company called Pacific Cement. He was selling recycled substandard cement to the city of San Francisco for parking garages and for an extension to the Bay Bridge. I mean, that's a no-no. That is substandard concrete. It can end in disaster.
Right.
Terrence Hallinan is charging him on a variety of fraud issues. She drops the case and settles for a minor environmental regulation. He doesn't go to jail. He pays a fine, and he just happily skips along.
Tell us about the Archdiocese of San Francisco. Apparently, they were all jammed up too with molesting priests like every other archdiocese and diocese in the country. What happened with her on that?
Well, so very startling statistics. From 2004 to 2011, she is the San Francisco prosecutor. During that seven-year period, she does not bring a single charge against a single priest for a sexual crime. To put that into context, Howie, of the top 50 major cities in the United States, every single one of them brought at least one charge against a priest on these charges, with the exception of Kamala Harris in San Francisco. Now, when you look into that election in 2003, when she beats Terrence Hallinan, some of her biggest backers are the law firms that are representing the diocese and are representing priests in civil cases and maybe facing criminal charges because of Terrence Hallinan. When Terrence Hallinan loses and she wins, she does not bring a single case. Worse than that, her predecessor, Terrence Hallinan, had got from the archdiocese, much to their reluctance, hundreds of pages of internal documents that named, according to Hallinan, 30 to 40 either recent or currently active priests who had been, questions had been raised by parishioners on inappropriate behavior. Hallinan was going to seek criminal charges when he could, and he was going to take out the names of victims and release those documents, as has been done in cities all across America. Kamala Harris beats him, takes his place. She deep sixes that document and puts it under seal and never brings a singular charge and never exposes anybody in any of those documents. And, of course, the victims groups went absolutely ballistic, and they're still angry with her.
We're talking to Peter Schweizer, the author of Profiles in Corruption, Abuse of Power by America's Progressive Elite, and he has chapters on all of the leading Democrat contenders in this year's primary field, and so that's why we're talking to him, because he has a chapter. He did a lot of research on Kamala Harris. Now, she was also, there was a high school, a Catholic high school in San Francisco that was in the midst of this, and it was the Jerry Brown went to the high school, the Gettys went to the high school, the oil family, and Gavin Newsom's father, I was just reading today, Gavin Newsom's father was a big lawyer for the Getty family, and he's now the governor of California, and she straightened out all of their problems as well, correct?
That's right. In those hundreds of pages, it was believed, and there's lots of other evidence to support this, that some of those allegations were against priests that worked at St. Ignatius Prep, which is an elite Catholic high school in San Francisco. Jerry Brown went there. He still waxes eloquently about how foundational it was to who he became and as a Catholic as he defines himself. Several generations of the Gettys went there. A member of the Getty family was on the board of directors at the time. The point being that this was a powerful institution among others that was about to get a serious amount of exposure of the activity that was going on under Terrence Hallinan, who was a very progressive, he was an ex-Bacher, a very pugnacious prosecutor, but he actually believed in holding powerful people into account. And that's what you find with Kamala. I mean, people are familiar with the stories where she goes after people with minor possession of marijuana. She throws the book at them and throws them to jail.
Right.
That's the one side. The other side is powerful people that are connected to her or her friends got a pass when she was the California prosecutor. They also got a pass when she moved on to become California Attorney General,
right,
as well.
And then she helped out the Service Employees International Union, a very powerful union in Democrat circles, when they were trying to block the sale of some failing hospitals. And that has not worked out well for the people of California, has it? There's an editorial in the Wall Street Journal about that today. Getting to know Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I've got a whole section on that in the book. I mean, she has regulatory authority to approve the sale of nonprofit hospitals. And attorney generals very rarely reject such deals because usually they're done because they're not financially viable. The Daughters of Charity, a Catholic charity, wanted to sell their hospitals to another nonprofit chain that had a very good reputation. The purchase was supported by the California Nurses Association. It was supported by the NAACP. It was supported by a whole host of people. Kamala Harris blocked it. Why? Because the nonprofit operator that wanted to take over those hospitals refused to allow the Service Employees International Union to organize their employees. And so the SEIU officials went to the head of the nonprofit hospital and said, it's really clear, Kamala Harris will not approve this deal unless you allow us to unionize. They refused, and Kamala Harris, really in an unprecedented form, rejected the sale of that hospital. She ended up, Howie, she rejected a nonprofit taking over those hospitals. She ended up supporting a hedge fund taking over those hospitals because they had no problem with the SEIU. And, of course, that hedge fund ended up closing a number of those hospitals because it's not viable for a hedge fund.
Oh, boy, what a mess. And then there's also her background. She had this guy. Did you get into this guy Larry Wallace? I think one of her top guys in the DA's office, the AG's office, then worked for her in the Senate, and he was charged with sexual harassment of his aides. They had to settle out of court for $400,000, and she claimed she knew nothing about it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is what you find all the time. Let me give you another really stark example. So, Kamala Harris's office, she's California Attorney General. She's the consumer advocate, right, Howie?
Right.
She's fighting for the little guy, the consumer. Her office receives between 700 and 800 complaints, largely from Hispanic citizens in California, about Herbalife, which is a naturopathic herbal company that is kind of a multi-level marketing thing. They file 700 to 800 complaints alleging fraud and a whole series of other things. Her San Diego office writes a 15 to 20 page memo going through these directly to Kamala Harris saying, A, we need to investigate, and B, we believe there is grounds to bring charges against Herbalife in this case. Kamala Harris not only does not bring charges, she does not allow her office to even investigate Herbalife. Now, here's where it gets interesting. She's married to a Los Angeles lawyer named Doug Emhoff.
Yeah.
At the time, he was the managing partner of a small law firm in New York. Who was one of their largest clients?
Herbalife? How did I figure that out?
So massive conflict of interest. And you'd think like, well, maybe this is just a coincidence, but you see this kind of behavior repeated over and over and over again by Kamala Harris. If you are connected to her politically, she is going to give you a pass.
This sounds Clintonian almost.
It is. And here's the thing. I mean, Howie, you and I have been talking about this for years, and I cover corruption and, legislators that introduce legislation that are favorable to themselves and their family. What's scary about this is there you're talking about people passing laws or doling out government contracts. Here you're talking about a person that is deciding whether certain people are going to go to jail for their crimes or whether people are going to be given passes. And that's what takes this to a higher level. We're not talking about some bad legislation. We're talking about law enforcement. Another example, real quick. She was very aggressive in going after energy companies on what she said were environmental crimes and, irresponsible behavior related to the environment. An energy company called Sempra has a well blowout in Southern California. The well blows out. It ends up being the largest methane gas leak in U.S. history. It's leaking methane gas for 10 months. Now, she went after all kinds of small operators for much more minor offenses. Does she go after this company? No. She never even investigates what happened. And then when you look at Sempra Energy, you find that there are people connected to it that were donors to her. But you find that California governor at the time, Jerry Brown's sister, sat on the board of directors of that energy company. So why does she choose to go after some small gas station that had a leak of one of its tanks and not go after a company that had the largest methane gas leak in American history? It's pretty clear why she chose to go after one and not the other.
Peter Schweizer, thanks for being with us. We'll have you on again to discuss this and maybe bring you back to discuss the Biden crime family. You have two chapters on the Bidens, I think. There's so much stuff there. Peter Schweizer, the author of Profiles in Corruption. It's just an amazing book. Thank you, Peter. I'm Howie Carr.
A nightmare to liberals everywhere. He's Howie Carr.
Hi, this is John in the People's Republic of Amherst, Massachusetts.
This is Heather from Litchfield, Maine.
This is Kent, Wichita, Kansas, and this is the Howie Carr Show.
We'll have Peter Schweizer on again, Profiles in Corruption, when it's time. It will be time soon to talk about the Bidens. And he's really great on the Bidens because, you know, we're all familiar now with Hunter because he's such a cartoon figure. You know, but as Schweizer has said in some of his other interviews, Hunter is just like the tip of the iceberg. You know, they're all of these people. His even his sister is involved in this, and his brother-in-law, his two brothers, and then the nieces and the nephews have been involved in kind of like petty crimes. And you know, where does the Biden family come up with all this dough? You know, we told you last week, they just put the D.C. Tax assessors just put a lien or garnished his wages, whatever, you know, claiming he owed $450,000 in income taxes to the District of Columbia, $450,000. And, you know, usually when you get something like that, you hire a lawyer, you hire an accountant, you fight it out, you know, tooth and nail for years. He paid it out in 6 days. He just came up with a check for $450,000. And yet he told the judge down in Arkansas in that paternity case that he was involved in with the stripper last year that he was destitute, that he hadn't worked in a year. He had no source of income. Yet he's living in a $12,000 a month apartment in L.A. and he's driving around a $129,000 Porsche. You know, where is this dough coming from? And, you know, Dad, middle class Joe, lunch bucket Joe, as he likes to call himself, has been making tens of millions of dollars since he got out of the vice presidency.
Where's Hunter? Where is Hunter? No, I went to one of them. I said, we have to have Where's Hunter as a witness. They said, what do you mean, Where's Hunter? I said, that's his first name. I have now made his first name Where's.
I think Hunter's a pretty good first name. Kind of reminds me of Hunter Thompson. And like Hunter Thompson, he's prone to see flying creatures come in front of his car when he's driving late at night through the Nevada desert. I'm not making that up. I'm not kidding, as Joe would say. I'm Howie Carr.